And so again, what happens is it narrows from the entire universe. And then last week we saw the creation of man, that it kind of zeroes in on mankind specifically. And what Paul talked about is that man being the pinnacle or the crown of creation, that the Bible has a high view of humanity and people. Talk about how we're majestic marvels, that you should always be astonished when you see another person. You're like, you can't look at somebody like that. That's amazing. It's unbelievable. The Bible says that people have great value, that we matter, that people are unique. And often we see Genesis 6 as kind of that pinnacle or crown of creation, but really the pinnacle, the point, the culmination of the whole account. What one commentator said, the crescendo was the seventh day, and the seventh day is the purpose and the point of the entire count. And at the core of that, we're going to see the point of it is because it's about God. It's about who God is and what he has done. It says that God finished all things, that God finished his work, that God blessed the seventh day, that God made it holy, that God rested from his work, that God is ultimate, that he is the center, that he is the point of everything. And so we're going to talk about what is going on this seventh day, the story of Sabbath, the story of Sabbath. We'll see three things. One is, what does the Sabbath teach us about God? What is the point of this? And then what we'll look ahead is, Paul talked about Genesis 1 and 2 gives us the essence of God's creation. But that essence is then expounded through the rest of the scriptures. The rest of the scriptures help us understand what God was doing in Genesis 1 and 2. And Genesis 1 and 2 helps us understand what God's doing in the rest of the scriptures. They're trying to trap Jesus, and they start talking to him about divorce. And Jesus immediately just goes back and starts talking to about Genesis 1 and 2. And he doesn't shame anyone. He doesn't talk bad about anyone or think some people are undeserving of God's love. He talks about how God created all things. And then he talks about how the effects of sin and brokenness and rebellion and how people hurt other people. But what we see in the rest of the scriptures is how the Sabbath functions for God's people. So what does it mean for the people of God? And then the last thing that I want to close with is, how can we make Sabbath part of our story? What does it look like to be people of rest, to be people who practice Sabbath in our culture, in our time? I was kind of looking back through some notes. I've probably either done series or sermons on Sabbath, potentially more than any other thing. I just think it's one of the most challenging commandments of the 10. It's the fourth commandment. In our culture, in our time, with the amount of information, with the amount of opportunities, with the availability of literally being able to travel the world, the call to stop, to rest, is one of the most challenging things for us. It's one of the most challenging things for me. So we want to say, like, how do we make Sabbath as part of our story? And so the first thing we see in Genesis 2, verses 1 to 3, is the Sabbath is about God. It says in verse 1 that God finished his work. It says that God rested from his work. It says that God blessed his work and made it holy. Verse 1 says, thus the heavens and the earth were finished and all the host of them. I mentioned this number 7. Is a significant number biblically. So if you're like a numbers person, he's trying to communicate something to us with this number, okay? Because it's everywhere. There's a Bible Project video on this account, and he just kind of geeks out and he finds way more things than this. It's like a whole chart of sevens. So if that's you, I'll send it to you. I'll post it and you can see it. But there's 7 words in Genesis 1:1. There's 14 words in Genesis 1:2. Kids, students, what's 7 times 2? 14. They're crushing it. There is 7 paragraphs in Genesis 1:1 to 2:3. God is used, his name's used as 35 times in that paragraphs. Kids, 7 times 5? 35, right? Land and sky, 21 times. verses, chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, it's used in each verse. The number 7 is the center in Hebrew of each verse. And so there's something about 7 that's trying to tell us it's the whole point of this entire story. And in the Bible, the idea of 7 is wholeness. It's completeness. And so when he is saying 7, 7, 7 in chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, he's like, hey, the creation is whole. Creation is complete. It says that the heavens and the earth were finished. And what is communicating is God was finished. He completed and perfected his act of creation. His act of creation was brought to a conclusion. He created, and then he stopped. One of the joys, because did stuff happen after Genesis chapter 1, right? He just created the garden, right? And was everything done? Was everything finished? It was like, no. But Derek Kidner in his commentary talks about the idea of Genesis chapter 1 and 2. It's pregnant with creation. And so if you think about a baby, and we have the Tussie crew here today with baby Cooper, that baby starts out in the mother's womb, right? And everything that baby needs to be a human is there. There's nothing new, right? And so I love, like, when we brought a little thing over there a couple weeks, and one of my favorite things about seeing a baby is, like, it's all already there. The fingers are already there. The toes are already there. It's already there. The hair's already there. Some have more, some have less. It's all already there, right? That's what's going on in creation. Now, what happens to a baby? It grows. It develops. It expands, right? It becomes more of what God created it to be. But think of when he says it's finished, like, hey, it was all there. Everything that God created was there. He didn't need to create anything new. It was complete. It's there. That's what he's driving at when he says that it is finished. And this would have been an encouragement for the people of God, because he wrote it to the people of God who were in the Exodus. They were traveling through the wilderness. They were traveling through the desert. And God's like, hey, I'm going to make you into a great nation. I'm going to give you this land. And they're roaming around. It's like, hey, God, it doesn't quite seem like you're going to do what you said you were going to do. And what God is encouraging them with, and what we need to encourage ourselves with, is that God completes what he starts. If God said he is going to do something, he will complete it. He will finish it. Now, y'all might have been alive long enough to know that, like, God doesn't complete and finish things the way that we think that he should often complete and finish things. It might not go the way that you think it should go, but God will complete. God will do what he says he will do. Philippians 1 said that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Christ Jesus. God says he will make you more and more into the image of God. One day you will be holy. That's a process that he will complete. He will finish. Creation, it starts as a garden. And if you go to the end of the book, Revelation chapter 20 to 22, it's a garden city. This garden has expanded to cover the whole face of the earth. And it's a city, it's a place for God and his people to dwell. Genesis 1 and 2 is just the start of that. And then it expands to the whole world. And he says he will bring it to completion. He will bring it to perfection. We can rest. The second thing that we see about God in verse 2 is that it says that, this sounds weird, and on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all of his work that he had done. It says that God rested from his work. The word rest there means to cease from work, to cease from his work of creating. He stopped creating. Now, God didn't, one commentator said, God didn't need a breather. Like, oh, that was really difficult. Let me catch my breath. Karina's like been lately. She's like, hey, are you okay? Like you seemed like out of breath. Are you there? Like God didn't need that. And I was like, no, I'm just old. Like that's what's going on. Like stuff that didn't cause me to be breathe heavy before now has. All right. But I'll get it checked out. We'll look at it. God doesn't need a breather. He's not tired. In fact, John 5 says that Jesus says that God continues. My Father is at work now. God created all things and he sustains all things. But when he says that God rested, it means that he stopped, and the rest is a deep pleasure, a rest of satisfaction, a rest of enjoyment. Derek Kinder says that is the rest of achievement, not inactivity. It says, for he nurtures what he creates. Yesterday we were at Edna Runner, and we just kind of asked them for a to-do list, like, hey, whatever cost, it's an after-school center for kids, and then they have a senior aspect of it. And we were like, hey, kind of watching there after being there for a while, like, hey, what do you pay somebody to do, or what do you have to do to yourselves that for yourselves that we could free you up financially and with your time that we can do so you can focus on the kids? Because if you got to do like background checks and all that stuff, it's a hard thing to be able to serve the kids. We can still do it and do it. But anyway, I was like, hey, what can we do? So we just like, it's like a honey-do list. It's like the Saturday morning once a month. What do you need to do? So we cleaned the vans. Travis, who's the executive director, was here a couple of months back. It says it saves them $6,000 a year for us to clean their vans, right? We wiped down the tables. We got some teachers in the house. Like, you know what a table looks like where kids eat snacks every day? You got 100 kids eating a snack with milk and Capri Suns and all the goodness. Goldfish, right? Graham crackers. We cleaned the tables, right? And then they have a garden in the back where it's like they can grow food and make the food, and it's awesome. And so yesterday, we did the garden. Marcia sat there and scrubbed this like water feature and scrubbed all the algae off of it. We were back there and they replanted the soccer field. It's like, just so you all know, I love grass. Like the grass you walk on, not the grass you smoke. I like it. I just like the way it looks. I like the way it feels. I like trying to keep ours alive. And so they planted this new grass, and it was beautiful. And then all of a sudden, there's these weeds just popping up everywhere. And I wish I would have put it on here. So Matt, Robbie, and I, we were just in there just like pulling the weeds out of the grass, right? And so one of my favorite things about yesterday was when it was all said and done, and we just looked at this one little section of grass, I was like, man, that's beautiful. That's awesome. I looked what Callie Beth and Chandler and Marsha and Bree did and pulling the weeds around the garden and cleaning up the water feature. I was like, man, that's beautiful. That's wonderful. That's better for the kids. That's better for when this place gives tours and they have to show people what they're doing here. It's majestic. I walked back in. I saw the tables that they took shaving cream and they washed them and washed them and scrubbed them and scrubbed them. And they were shining. I mean, they still get ate on every day, but it was one. And then you look at the vans and the kids washing the vans and cleaning them, and you see the muck and the mud that's there, and just sort of like the dust of Florida that covers the vans, and they were beautiful. And everybody kind of sat around afterwards and drank some water and ate some oranges and drank. And that's like the best part of the day. What was going on? We were resting in. We were enjoying the work. God said he made everything and he rested. He enjoyed it. He appreciated it. He took pleasure in it. He was satisfied with it. It's what he did on the Sabbath. It also shows us that God has, C. John Collins calls it God's work week. It sets up a rhythm of work and rest. And if we're made in the image of God, we have that same rhythm. So if God works for 6 days and then he rested, that's what we're to do as well. We'll get into what that looks like, but it's God's work week. So God worked for 6 days and then he rested. And then the last thing we see about God is that verse 3, it says that God blessed the seventh day. It says, so God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all of his work that he had done in creation. He blessed it and he made it holy. Kent Hughes says that God's blessing bestows on this special day, holy, solemn day, a power which makes it fruitful for human existence. The blessing gives the day, which is a day of rest, the power to stimulate, to animate, to enrich, and give fullness to life. There was something about the seventh day that caused it to be fruitful, to multiply. We saw it when Paul preached on creation of man. It says that God made man in his image, and it says that he blessed them, and he said, be fruitful and multiply. And that's what he's done with creation. He created it and he blessed it. And he says, be fruitful, multiply, expand. Have my glory cover the face of the earth. One commentator says that God creates and then he dispenses his benefits into all of creation. That's what he's doing. And so Sabbath is about God. See, John Collins put it this way. He says, the author's point of view is one of adoring the God who made everything there is. It's part of what Sabbath is. God adored his creation and we adore God. And of exalting in the variety of fecundity. I looked it up. And I actually listened to Google like talk. Like, how do you say that word? Which I just butchered. It's a hard word to say. It means to produce. It means to grow. It means to multiply. That's what God did with creation, the growth of his creation. He says, we see the author's approval of the Sabbath rest when God blessed it and made it holy. The implication is that the pious reader should likewise adore the creator, exalt in the creation, and revel in the Sabbath. And so when it says that God blessed, when God made it holy, when God set it apart, it's a day that we are called to stop, to adore the creator, to worship God, to exalt in creation, to enjoy God and everything that he has made. And I'll get into this word because I liked it, and to revel in the Sabbath, to take pleasure in what God has created. So when we understand it is about God and worshiping him and enjoying him and taking pleasure in his creation, that shapes how we view it. And we see this play out in the scriptures. We see Sabbath throughout all the people of God. Again, Paul talked about seeing the essence of God and life with him in the creation narrative, and we see it with Sabbath, and then it's expounded and rightly understood in light of the rest of the scriptures. And because we're made in the image of God, we reflect God in how we view Sabbath. And so Sabbath is a day that is set apart for God. That's what it always has been for the people of God. And we see what it does for us. It does four things. And we're called to rest during Sabbath. We're called to resist, to revel in, and remember. The first thing God calls us to do on this one day, this set apart day, is to rest. And when we actually rest, it actually cultivates faith in us. My friend Jamie, I talked to him about these. But resting cultivates faith. This word, rest, as you see it in verse 2, it literally means to stop. It means to cease. The Bible Project talked about that there was manna from heaven, and then one day it stopped. Like, the manna didn't get tired. It just stopped being produced. It ceased being produced. So the word Sabbath means to rest. And when at the core of it, it's a time to stop and remind ourselves that we're not God. It's why the world we find ourselves in is so exhausted. We think it's all on us. We think we have to control and care for all things. Sabbath is a time to remind ourselves that we're not God and that he is. Pete Scazzaro put it this way in Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. He says, we stop on Sabbath because God is on the throne. That's like, we can just stop it all right there, right? We can stop on Sabbath because God is on the throne, assuring us the world will not fall apart if we cease our activities. He said, life on this side of heaven is an unfinished symphony. And he went ahead and he used an example of an unfinished symphony. He's like, we're all going to pass away. We're all going to die. And guess what? Things are not going to get done. There's things that we would have started that don't get finished. It's just the reality, right? And so what this is saying is that we can take one day a week to let some things go unfinished, that they're not going to get done. And it's okay. It really is. It'll be there the next day. You can do it then. I can do it then. Life this side of heaven is an unfinished. Hopefully that's freeing for you and not like sad. That's good news. He says, God is at work taking care of the universe. He manages quite well without us having to run things. Right? as Christians, as followers of Christ, as believers and followers of Jesus, we can stop because we know that Jesus is on the throne. Ruth Haley Barton calls Sabbath a sanctuary in time in order to honor the limits of our humanness. It's a way to honor the limits of our humanness, that we just stop, that we know that we're finite, that we're created, not the creator. And so there's one call for us to rest, to stop, to not produce. The second thing, Walter Brueggemann has a book called Sabbath as Resistance, which is really good. But Sabbath is a call to resist. It cultivates grace in us to remind us that who we are isn't just what we accomplish or what we acquire. In practicing Sabbath, what we're doing is pushing back against a world and a culture that says you are what you accomplish. You are what you acquire. You are what you do. What do we ask people when we meet somebody? What do you do? What are we asking? Who are you? That's like, that's not your identity as a Christian. And we live in a culture that is about what you accomplish and what you acquire and what you do. And Sabbath is a saying, I'm more than that. I'm going to resist that. I'm a son. I'm a daughter of the King. And he's on the throne. And I'm going to live in response to who he is. This is what the gospel says. Ephesians 2, 8 through 9 says, for by grace you have been saved through faith. And this is not your own doing. It's a gift from God. Not a result of works, so that no one may boast. Right? So as a Christian, we can resist the need to constantly do things, to constantly accomplish, to constantly acquire, to constantly get ahead. We just got through, kids are starting school back up, right? Right? We went through they did a really good job with them here. The orientations. Curriculum night. Good job with curriculum night. But you go, and we were talking about like all the stuff that we're doing with the kids. I was talking to Zach and Katie about it, whose kids aren't in school. And Zach just goes, and Will's taking this like SAT, like prep thing and class that he's in. And Zach's like, it's like an arms race. Kids in school is like an arms race, or kids in sports like an arms race. Like, you're just trying to get ahead. And I was like, yeah, but, you know, if he gets the scholarship, then this college becomes more of a thing. He's like, oh, I get it. He's like, because everybody's doing it. He's like, we just showed up and took the SAT, right? I just showed up and took the ACT. 23, got me into Mizzou, done. We're finished, right? 23 ain't getting you into Mizzou anymore, right? I would not be going. There's a point that we just resist that. It says we're not going to do that. The third thing that we learn and that we're called to do in Sabbath is to revel in God and his creation. Sabbath is an opportunity to celebrate creation. You see it in Exodus 20. And what it does, it cultivates joy in us. Exodus 20 in the Ten Commandments there ties Sabbath to creation. It says, remember the Sabbath. Keep it holy. Verse 11, for in 6 days God created the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested. And then it goes on to talk about God's creation. And so part of Sabbath is to stop, to enjoy, to revel in God's goodness in his creation. Revel, I looked it up because I like that quote. It says it means to enjoy oneself wildly. To enjoy oneself wildly and to take great pleasure in something. God's calling us to take great pleasure in his creation, to enjoy it wildly. Is that what you think of when you think of Sunday? I'm going to enjoy everything that God has given me wildly, to enjoy what God has made, to enjoy the fruits of our labor, to actually stop and enjoy all the things that God has given us. That's part of what we're called to do. John Mark Comer has like this quippy little thing where he talks about people reject, you know, like kind of the deceitfulness of our hearts and our kind of rebellion because we reject Sabbath. He's like, it's like rejecting ice cream. God's like, I'm going to give you a day to do nothing but enjoy everything that I have given you and enjoy me. And we're like, nope, I'd rather work. I'd rather grind it out a little bit more. I'd rather accomplish more. I'd rather acquire more. There's a call to revel, to cultivate joy, to enjoy God and his creation. Another aspect of Sabbath, it's a call to remember. If in Exodus 20, it Sabbath is sort of tied to celebrating creation, and Deuteronomy 5, there's a call to celebrate redemption, to cultivate our love from God. And what it does is God reminds them that they were slaves in Egypt, but that the mighty Lord had redeemed them. And so he says, observe the Sabbath and keep it holy. Verse 15 says, you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out. Sabbath is a set apart day to remember who God is, to remember what he has done for you. That's what we're doing here. It's like a remembrance service. That's why there's a call, because I mean, truthfully, there's a lot of, you don't need to be a Christian to see the benefits of a day to rest, a call to resist, a call to rebel. That's in like every like life hack book or news feed that we all are inundated with, right? I would say they're all on there because there's something innate, there's something in us that we need that. But what sets apart the Christian Sabbath is this idea of remembering. Leviticus 23 says, 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath, a solemn rest. It says, a holy convocation. You shall do no work. It is a Sabbath to the Lord in all your dwelling places. Book of Hebrews says, don't forsake meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but do so more, all the more as the day approaches. What we're called to do is remember. We gather together to remember who God is, to remember what he's accomplished through Jesus, through his life, through his death, through his resurrection, to remember we're a part of his people, a part of his kingdom. It's a day of remembrance. And it all points us to Jesus. That's what all these things do. We rest because of who Jesus is. We resist because of who we are in Christ. We revel in the goodness of all things that Jesus has given us. We remember what Jesus has accomplished for us. One commentator called Jesus the Lord of Rest. I was like, huh? I've never heard that before. But it's the story of Sabbath, of resting in God, of resisting, of remembering, of reveling, finding our fulfillment in Christ. He says it in Mark chapter 2, it says, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. The Son of Man is the Lord of rest. Why can we rest? Because of who Jesus is. Why can we rest? Because Jesus is on the throne. It says that he ascended into heaven and he sat down at the right hand of God. And it says that he is dispensing his benefits to us. He has made you a son. He has made you his daughter. He will provide for you. He will care for you. He wants your joy. He wants your goodness. Jesus says, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart. And you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. My friend Jamie was talking about that we can now have rest. We can have the light burden of Jesus because on the cross, Jesus did the hard work. He took the heavy burden of our sin, right? It's sin that causes us to be restless. It's sin that causes us not to be able to stop, to have to prove ourselves. Satan uses deception and lies. You're not enough. God's holding out on you. Jesus says, no, like, come to me. I've bared your burden. I've paid the penalty. You're free. For freedom, Christ has set us free. It says, therefore, don't come under the yoke of slavery. So when we have a right understanding of who Jesus is, that he is the Lord of rest, we find rest for our souls. That's what Paul was talking about. He says that our souls are restless until they find their rest in thee. That's what Jesus has done. That's what Jesus has accomplished. And now we need to remind ourselves of that. We can stop. Why? Jesus is on the throne. We can stop. Why? I don't have to prove myself anymore. I don't have to live with a posture of shame, of guilt. I'm forgiven. I'm accepted. I'm loved. I've been redeemed. I can rest. And so I wanted to just give some practical things. We can talk more about these in community groups. I got a couple like articles and things that we just have in general. But what does it look like to make Sabbath as a part of our story? What does it look like for each of us to have resistance, to rest, to revel, to remember? And I think you have to start as that we see Sabbath as an act of resistance. That we live in a world and our hearts are sort of trained to constantly want to accomplish, to do more, and we actually have to resist it. And I can do this because, like, have you ever tried to walk away from work? Have you ever tried to, like, walk away from producing, from being active? And if you haven't, and then you try, what you'll find out is that it's a battle. And it's a battle that takes intentionality, that it takes time. I was talking to Zach about this earlier. Like, it's a blessing and a curse that we can work all the time and anywhere, right? I'm like, oh, we can just go wherever we want and do work, right? Actually, brother-in-law Tom was there. We moved down here. I married into fishing, and I remember he brought Dingo out. We were out on the boat, and I was like, hey, what is it about boating? Like, it was awesome. I was like, beautiful boat out on the water. It was blue. Like, I got that part. And I was like, why do you like it so much? He's like, it's the only place nobody can get a hold of me. I can't do anything. I'm out in the middle of the ocean. Right? It's hard. It's hard to stop. A little like kind of Baptist pastor thing. What they'll talk about is they're like, Sunday morning's a Saturday night decision. I picture a country person saying that for some reason. It's my country thing, right? And they're right, right? But I would take it a step further. I would say Sunday morning is a Monday morning decision. How are you going to live a life of resistance? How are you going to live a life where God is first, that he is the priority, that he is ultimate, and then all things fall under that? It takes intelligence. We must see Sabbath as an act of resistance. The second thing is like, hey, what does it look like for me to rest? The call is to pick a 24-hour window to just stop. Ideally, that would be Sunday. My conviction is that gathering with the people of God is part of Sabbath. Now, that doesn't always work. I talked to Chandler. He's a firefighter. He's not here right now. God, why? He's out like saving people's lives. He's bringing healing and restoration to the Sabbath, right? Lee's here. There's Sundays he's not here. Why? Firefighter. He's working, right? He's doing what Jesus was doing on the Sabbath, healing people. So you can't get legalistic with this stuff. But in general, there is a call to gather with the people of God on Sunday. And then there's a call for us to rest, to take time for what Tim Keller called sheer inactivity. Take a nap. This will be me in about 3 hours. Our kids are like, you're so weird, right? I will lay on the couch. I will turn on a golf course tournament. I actually like the earlier part of the golf tournaments, like where it's like super boring. It's not like who's going to win and you get all into it. Like I like the boring, like, and they're like, Dad, you're sleeping. And they try to change a channel and they put on something. I was like, nope, don't change the channel. It's like, this is like my, what are those little noise machine in the background? Why? So I can have sheer inactivity. I don't want to do anything. I got a little corner of the couch. We got a couch that goes like this and I lay that way. It's great. Don't do anything. Take a nap. Go sit on the beach. We got this thing. It's right over there. It's very big. It's got sand. You can bring a chair. You can sit in the sun. And you don't do anything. It's amazing. You go try it. Rest. Stop. But it's not just resting and stopping. This is what I was talking to earlier. Like, it's more than like doom scrolling and bed rotting. Guys, are we familiar with bed rot? Yes. Right? Okay. Go Google it. Right? It's literally sitting in your bed for hours upon end just with your phone. It's a phenomenon. And they were talking about how teenagers do this, and then all these comments under the article were like, I'm 52, that's what I do. It wasn't just the kids, right? That's not restful. Rest. The next thing that we're called to do is revel. Revel in God's goodness. Revel in God's creation. What do you enjoy? What is something that you just really like? Remember Larry and Mary Ellen's son, Dan, I was talking to him about this, and he was talking to a mentor, a counselor type, and he's like, yeah, I just think I like golf too much, right? And then the guy was like, hey, tell me more about that. And he's like, well, what do you like about it? And he just started telling him about what he likes about golf. And the guy's like, it sounds like you really do like that. And he goes, I do. And then he goes, you should do that more. And he's like, I don't think I'm supposed to do that more. And he's like, I think you are. You really enjoy it. You should do that. And so he plays golf. He shot 68 the other day. It's great. He's really good. Right? But what do you enjoy? Are you an introvert? Are you an extrovert? Right? You need to ask, what is your job? There's a Jewish rabbi that talks about that a lot of pastors quote. But he says, if you work with your hands, then Sabbath with your mind. If you work with your hands, Sabbath with your mind. And if you work with your mind, Sabbath with your hands, right? So I like read and pray and talk to people and get this stuff together, right? And so it's not restful for me just to do that some more, right? So I like cutting the grass. I like sweating. I like going for bike rides. I like doing stuff. There was a guy at our church in Orlando, and he was like in his 50s, and he was a tree trimmer. Dude was like a ninja. And so we had this tree, we bought this house, and the male lady called it the jungle, and so we needed all the trees trimmed. And Luke was just flying around with this chainsaw and these ropes, trimming all these trees down. And I'm like, man, that looks like really hard work. And you could die very easily doing that. And I was like, Luke, what do you like to do for Sabbath? And he's like, I read. Right? He's like, I lay there and I read. I'm so hot, I'm so tired, I'm so sore every week that I just read. Ryan O'Malia, part of Crosspoint, he's an eye surgeon, right? Focused, delicate, messing with people's eyes, right? And I'm like, Ryan, tell me about Sabbath. He's like, my favorite thing to do is I wake up really early in the morning. He's also the father of five little kids. Wakes up early in the morning, he goes, I go kite surfing. Let me tell you about kite surfing, right? He's just ripping through the ocean. He's like, there's this one time I got thrown into the rocks and I thought I was going to die and blah, blah. Why? It's the opposite of what he does the other 5 days of the week. So what causes you to revel, to enjoy God? There is a vocational activity. What's not your job that you like to do? What's recreational that you like to do? What refreshes you? Keller talks about what is aesthetic rest. How can you just take in beauty? Karina helps me with that. She likes pretty things. She likes architecture and landscaping and painting, all of it. She makes things look beautiful. And she's helped me learn to appreciate that. I was like, I don't know, it's fine. It's a painting. How can you revel in God's creation? And then the last thing, and we'll close with this, is what does it look like for you to remember? How can you take contemplative time, time for silence, time for scripture, time for prayer, time to be with God on your own? It's a part of Sabbath, but there's also a part of Sabbath that's a corporate gathering. Again, don't forsake meeting together as some in the habit of doing. Why? This is what we're made for. We're made to worship God, to rest in God, to be reminded of who God is. It's a time to remember. One of the things that we kind of fluctuate with our Crosspoint communities. Right now we go to the Sunday group because our kids are teenagers and there's like practices all the time, right? And so Sunday night, and so my promise to people who are in the Sunday group is like, hey, this is gonna be a restful group. We're gonna come, we're gonna talk about the scriptures, but we're gonna have dinner. And so your kids are gonna go home and we're gonna end at 6:30. So they'll be home and fed and you don't have to meet with dinner and it's gonna be restful and relaxing and you're gonna wanna come. It's part of it. And so what does it look like for you? How do you need to evaluate your life and say, hey, what does it look like to resist a culture of earning? What does it look like for me to actually stop? To pick a window of time to stop? What causes me to revel in the goodness of God? And how can I remember who he is and what he has done through Jesus? Let's pray.